All right, so this is the fourth and last in the series on frontiers in halacha and biotechnology. So, excuse me, this is obviously not going to be psak. I'm not going to give any verdicts. I'll give you many verdicts, actually. I won't give you one verdict. I'll give you many choices. We're not going to deal with every aspect of the debate because we have 1 hour. But our topic is clean meat, as it's called. Another term for it is artificial meat or fake meat, but not fake meat in the sense of soy products. Fake meat in the sense that it doesn't come from an animal that grew in what we think of as the normal ways that that animals grow. Instead, what we're talking about, and I'll describe it in more detail in a few minutes, but what we're talking about is growing meat from meat cells. In a, you know, a petri dish, so to speak, in a culture. And again, we'll talk about how exactly it's done. But when you do that, you have to ask several sets of questions. There are three main questions that have to be addressed regarding that first cell that you start with. If the cell comes from a shechted kosher animal, so it's an animal that underwent proper shechita. It was from a cow. It was from a kosher species. So is it fleshik? Right? Is this meat? If the animal comes from a live kosher animal, then we have to add a question. Right? What would be a concern if it came from a live animal? What would we have to worry about? No. If it came from a live animal, it was never shechted. And you can't shecht it, it's going to grow as a slab of meat. There's nothing there to shecht. You have to ask the question of Aver min hachai, or Basar min hachai, right? There's an issur, there's a prohibition against taking flesh from a living creature. You took the cell from a living creature and then produced this piece of meat. Is it flesh from a living creature? And there are all sorts of permutations there. What if you take it from a hoof? What if you take it from muscle? What if you take it from hide? You know, all sorts of questions that come in.
The cell isn't flesh.
Why not? It's a meat cell. All the flesh is made up of cells.
I don't think you eat cells.
Yeah, you better eat cells. If you don't eat cells, you're not eating anything. It's all cells. And then the third question is, let's say it comes from a non-kosher animal altogether, live or dead. Then you have to ask the question of whether the cell retains the status of a non-kosher animal. Is it what we call yotze min ha'asura, yotze min ha'tameh? Is it something which is prohibited because it comes from a prohibited source? So that's our first round of three basic questions, but then you have to ask second level questions. Let's say that the cell has a prohibited status. Let's say the cell that came from a non-kosher animal and now it has the status of a non-kosher animal. Or let's say it came from a live animal and therefore it's Avram and Achai, it's from the living. Or let's say it came from a shechted kosher animal and it's fleshik. But here's an interesting question. Is this cell subject to what we call bittul, nullification? Would we say that if it gets into a mixture with all the cells that come from it as it reproduces, or all the things that you have to add in order to create the meat in the end, because as we'll see, it isn't just that you plop the cell down and it starts to multiply. Could it be batel? Could it be nullified? Another question. You can't actually see the cell that we're talking about. You can't actually see it. It's invisible. So if it's invisible, can I say that it's therefore insignificant? Right? In halacha, we do say in general that things that are invisible are insignificant. If someone tells me that there are bacteria on my food, the bacteria aren't non-kosher. They may be unhealthy, but they're not non-kosher. If someone tells me that there's a blemish on my esrog, which is visible with a microscope, I tell them yeshkoach. Doesn't make a difference. My esrog is 100% kosher. So, do we say that this cell is insignificant if it is invisible? And then another question that comes along with it in the second round of questions. When this cell reproduces, are those new cells given the same status as the original cell? So the original cell was usher because it came from a non-kosher animal. or a live animal, all the cells that come from it, are those also going to be prohibited? And then, after you get through your second level questions, you have to ask a third level of questions, which are questions that aren't about the cell itself, like the medium that it grows in. What if the medium it grows in has non-kosher ingredients in it, as we'll talk about actually in a little bit? What about Marisaic concerns? Let's say it's considered 100% kosher. I'm going to take my big slab of laboratory-grown meat, and I'm going to call it kosher and parav, and I'm going to put a piece of cheese on it. Do I have to worry that that's an issue of Marisaic, of appearances? We are not going to go through all the three different layers of questions. What I want to do instead is to show you how the debate surrounding the kashrus and status of this clean meat is fundamentally about three approaches to defining what meat is. You can break it down into three basic approaches of defining meat. So first let's talk technology. What exactly is it that they're doing? So they take a type of cell that's called a myoblast from an animal. Myoblasts are early stage cells that are already differentiated enough. You know, when you start out, when the creature is first forming, so you have stem cells, which can become many different things. But they don't want to use stem cells for the artificial meat, because the stem cells could grow into anything. You'd have to coach it, so to speak, to form the types of things that will produce meat. You don't want to have bone. Right? If you get your lab all set up, and then you're growing bone in the lab instead of meat, that's not going to work well for your investors. So what they do is they take these cells called myoblast cells. These are going to grow into some form of muscle, and they grow them in a culture. And they grow very quickly, quickly enough to be worthwhile. And then, once they've started to grow in the culture, they place them on a plant-based scaffold on which the tissue will form. Seaweed is actually what I've seen referred to. It's a frame, and then the tissue grows along the frame. That's the basic idea. There are nuances. There are different companies that are working on it. I have no doubt they each have their own technologies that they're working with. It's a little bit complicated in terms of determining the halakha here, because there are different accounts of the technology involved, and they're either incomplete or contradictory. So, for example, one article that I read, and I'm going to refer to, is by Rabbi Dr. Chanoch Kahn, who I'm told is also Peter Kahn. He has a smicha from YU, and he has a medical degree from Einstein. He learned at the Gush. Rabbi Ziering actually told me that he was a chavrus of his at one point. So I'm going to refer to his article from the Shalvim Journal of Hamayan. He writes that the cells come from dead animals, so you can get it after Shechita, and thereby avoid the Averman Hachai discussion. However, Rabbi Yaakov Ariel, in an article in Tchumen, insists that they come from live animals. That's a very big difference, because that raises the Averman Hachai discussions. That's one example. Another example, Rabbi Yehuda Bezalel Spitz wrote an article in Tchumen. He's from, I forget where he's from, but he said that they use blood in the medium in which the cells grow. Well, that's just going to torpedo everything. Because if I'm going to take my food and soak it in blood, it's not going to be kosher. I don't care how, you know, clean the clean meat is, it's absorbing blood. So that creates its own problem. So you need a culture that's going to be kosher in order for this to work. Okay, so those are just, that's a little bit of the technology after we spent the first couple of minutes just outlining layers of questions. But let's get to our three different views. The first view, as I articulated on the sheet, is that meat cells that are not born from a mother animal are not meat. And people come at this from a few different angles. The first source I'm going to bring, just because people mention it, although it's clearly irrelevant, but everybody mentions it, so you have to, is the Gemara in Sanhedrin Nun Tesamun Beis. Source number one. It's an entertaining story, if nothing else. Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta, Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta, he's a Tana sage from the Mishnah's time. He's traveling on the road. Pagu bohanach aryavasa davu konami la'apei. He meets some lions, and the lions are roaring at him.
So Omar, he says the pasuk, "Hakfirim shoagim latarif." Right? He said to Hillel. He says, "Barchi nafshi, hakfirim shoagim latarif." The young lions are roaring for prey. So nachisulei tarte atmasa. So two pieces of meat come out of the sky. Atmasa is generally like the thigh of the animal. So two legs come out of the sky. Chada achluha. One of them the lions eat. V'chada shavkua, and one they left alone. Strange lions. They were on a diet. They left one of the pieces there. Okay. I say va'asu the be'medrash. So he brings it to the base medrash, and Bayola, he asks, "Davar tame huzeh o davar tahor? Is this kosher?" He wants to know. Can we have a barbecue? Amrulei ain davar tame yored min hashamayim. To which the response was, if it's coming down from shamayim, from heaven, it's got to be kosher. Similar ideas found in the Radak in source number 2. I'm not going to go into it in depth because we have too much to see. But the Radak is dealing with the story of Elisha and the Shunammite, the woman who he gives oil to. So miraculously, she keeps getting more oil. The pitcher keeps getting filled up. So she asks him, "Do I have to separate Truman Meiser from it?" And his answer is, "You don't need to because it is from a miracle. Therefore, it must be already tithed. You don't have to worry about miracle products." So the first argument goes that if it comes about via nace, if it comes about miraculously, then you don't have to worry about it. It's 100% fine. However, this is clearly not relevant here. It's clearly not relevant here. As every writer on the topic points out, I don't know why they bother quoting the source in the first place, because this isn't a miracle. First of all, because that Gemara is not even talking about things that are created miraculously. It's about things that are transported miraculously. In the story with the meat from Hashem and Chalapta, God took it from one place and brought it to from point A to point B. That's not a miracle. It is a miracle, but it's not created from nothing. That's not what we're... That's not our case. It's not analogous to our case. But second, because our case isn't a miracle at all. Our case is simply science. We've managed to replicate the way it happens in nature. It's a natural process, fundamentally. So throw that out. More commonly, you see a second source quoted, which I don't think is particularly relevant, but again, everybody quotes it, and that's source number 3. Source number 3 is dealing with magic, and different kinds of magic. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that there's a kind of magic which is entirely mutar, entirely permitted to practice, despite the fact that the Torah prohibits magic. This one is fine. What is it? Keder al Chanina Rav Oshia, like Rav Chanina Rav Oshia did. Komale Shabsa Abu Aski Behochos Yitzira. All day Friday, they would involve themselves in the laws of creation. And they made a one-third calf for themselves. Usually this is explained to mean that it's a calf that's one-third grown. It's soft and tender. There are alternate explanations for it. Not relevant right now. The point is they made a good animal, and they ate it. So says the Gemara. And the Shalah, writing in Parshas Vayeshev, says there's no need for Shechita. Rishai Levi Harwood says it's not a natural animal. Doesn't need Shechita. Lest you say, let's disregard that because that's weird Hasidish mysticism or something. The Pisrei Tshuva in source number 4 quotes you the Shalah. And then he writes, he associates in the story of Yosef and his brothers, and Yosef telling his father that they were doing things that were prohibited. But then the end of the second line in source number 4 from the Pesrei Tshuva, "V'nirat mikomakom asur lachlo b'lo shechita midirabanan mishum marasayin." He says, because of appearances, you should have to shecht the animal. But otherwise, you would not require shechita. The Pesrei Tshuva is a serious halachic source. And he is telling me that really, letter of the law, shechita would not be required for this creature. Not only that, the Cheshek Shlomo, the Dayan of Vilna, said the laws of meat and milk don't apply in source number 5. He says if you have meat that is created via the Sefer Yetzirah, then it is not meat. And meat and milk doesn't apply, and he says that's what Avraham Avinu served to the Malachim who came to his tent, and that's why he didn't have to worry about Vayikachem Av Chalav Uben Abakar. The answer is that's okay because the meat was actually from Sefer Yetzirah, and I read I forget who I saw this in, but the contention was that don't claim Marisayan issues, because everybody knew that Avram only had meat that he created with the Sefer Yetzirah. So therefore, there was never any problem. Eli?
I was going to say that there's no indication, I'm asking.
Yeah.
Is there any indication in the Gemara and Sanhedrin that they didn't shecht it? The Pesach issue is
no.
Also, but...
No.
So this is, it's not
this is the Shalah statement.
The reason from the Gemara, the proof from the Shalah.
Correct. But it's really hard to take this view seriously. I mean, in terms of associating it with our discussion, because again, we're not using the Sefer Yetzirah, right? We're not. I mean, that's not what we're talking about. It's really not relevant. Rabbi Tzvi Reisman, who is the major writer on this topic, who is lenient, who wants to say that in a well thought out way that this meat is okay in all fronts. It's not fleshik and there's no way for an achai and everything else. So in source number 6 he says, in Yaneinu, for our purposes, Yitziras Basar b'ma'abada mitageza inanes. He says, making meat in a lab from a stem cell, it's not truly a stem cell as we talked about in the beginning, nonetheless, making meat in the lab is not a miracle. Ach barusha basar lono tzarbadera harugila, but it's not made in the regular way we get meat either. Shaba nivru kobale achayim, the way that you usually produce, you know, animals. Zo mitzius chadasha shel yitzira, it is a new thing. This is a brand new type of creation. Hanaseis al yidei ataro his arbus yidei adam, which comes about via human involvement. V'yesh l'damosa l'bria yidei sefer yitzira, and he says in that sense you can compare it to the sefer yitzira. What he gets at, which is I think the important point, and he wants to use it as a sign to aid being lenient, is that fundamentally, if it doesn't come from a mother, it's not meat. It's not because it was made with Sefer Yetzirah, it's because it was not made with normal procreation. The definition of meat is that it comes from meat, so to speak, and not in the way that we're talking about. Now, those two views, as I said, are very hard to take seriously. Those two sources, I should say, are hard to take seriously. Just because what they're talking about is so alien and so weird that drawing a parallel from that to what we're doing in a lab doesn't really seem appropriate. And indeed, Rebecca Ariel, writing on this, says, come on, you can't be serious. But there is another source you can bring that is more substantive. And that is a quote from Rav Herschel Schechter. Rabbi Dr. Kahn brings it in an essay in which in his essay on artificial meat, he brings it sort of from sideways from a completely different point that Rav Schechter is making in the article, which is not relevant here. But take a look at number 7, the part that is germane. He says, Bisicha, in a conversation, meaning with Rav Schechter, and he tells you, is on Chav Beis Adar Tavshanayin Beis, Hivhir HaRav Schechter Sheledato Basar Hu Rak Davar Shemekaro Mibal Chayim Shenolad Be'en B'derech HaTeva. He says, Rav Schechter told him that meat is something which comes from an animal that was born from mother in the natural way. Now, how do you define natural ways? A good question. What if it's a test tube baby in the more conventional sense of a test tube? It's funny that we call that conventional. But that's what he says. He says, "Kol basar shemiyutzar b'derech acheres, eino basar l'inyanim echadiyim." If it's made in some other way, it isn't meat. So Schechter told him in a personal conversation that meat has to be born in the usual way. This may be similar to what Rav Shlomo Aviner writes. Take a look at source number 8 in the English. Rav Aviner says, this meat, quotes, undergoes many changes to the point that its entire identity is different. This is the same as gelatin from non-kosher animals. The bones undergo so many changes that the product is considered an entirely new creation. While some authorities are strict about this issue, the basic halacha is that gelatin is kosher. So writes Rav Aviner. Now the idea that gelatin can be associated with this is actually difficult and challenged by writers on this point. Because the reason why gelatin is argued to be permissible for those who permit it is because you actually take something that was edible and then you treat it with chemicals to make it inedible before transforming it to later, you know, make it into something food grade. Here, you're taking meat, taking a very, 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 very small piece of meat, and letting it multiply. But he says this is what is called panim chadashos. It now has a new identity. And as I wrote at the end of that paragraph, Rav Dov Lior says something similar in a video. It's a fascinating video. You have to know when you're watching it, the video is produced by Supermeat. Supermeat is a company in Israel, one of two leading companies that are working on creating clean meat. And they have an interview with Rav Aviner, Rav Dov Lior, and Rav Yuval Shurlo, and all of them say this meat is kosher and parav. That's their statement. Yeah. So the upshot of this view, if you take the view that in order for it to be meat, it has to be born from a mother, then yeah, all the questions we started with in the beginning. What if it comes from a live animal? Is that Eber Min HaChai? What if it comes from a non-kosher animal? Is it Yotze Min Aser? Or Bittul? Throw it all out the window. This isn't meat in the first place. The only thing you'll have to deal with is the question we ask, what if the medium it grows in isn't kosher? If there's blood in the medium that it grows in, then all bets are off, because could you soak the piece of kosher artificial meat in non-kosher blood, and now it's non-kosher. So do not pass go, do not collect $200. But if you have a kosher culture, then everything will be fine. That's all view number one, though. Yeah.
But it sounds like you'd still have to do shechita, but then you can eat with basar b'chala.
No, I wouldn't need to do shechita.
You wouldn't have an animal to shecht anyway.
There's nothing to shecht. If I were going with the Sefer Yetzira thing and I had an animal, but here there's nothing. What are you going to shecht it from? Do I have to grow a trachea in order to be able to cut
the
trachea?
Are they growing full blown animals?
No, slabs.
They're just growing slabs.
Yeah. I know one of the chidushim, one of the novelties that the Israeli companies are doing, or one of them is doing, I forget which one it was that I read it about, is that they figured out a way to differentiate the materials in it so that they will mimic the thickness and texture of meat. One of the problems that they had with the originals was that they were just growing this very soft stuff, because meat has the texture it has in part because of the combination of fat and muscle and everything that's in it. And if you don't grow with that kind of differentiation, you won't have the right texture. So they will have, it'll have some kind of differentiation within it, but it's not going to move. So to speak.
So was this basically the basic sources for cloned animals in halacha? Or is it
so,
full animals?
So cloning is a separate discussion. Then it would seem that it would require. Although, I guess you have to ask Rav Shachter the question, right? If Rav Shachter believes that when it comes from something other than the mother, but in the cloning case, it does. Yeah, it's working with an egg cell. It's working, yeah. So I think the cloning would have to be looked at separately.
The whole sheep thing that was just growing.
But they need, here, right? It needs to be implanted into a... They don't grow it out of a test tube.
That one this year that they did grow in a test tube, that sheep.
No.
I think this still needs to be implanted.
No. I think they're implanted. We don't have artificial uteruses yet.
They had
it will happen.
This year, but it's a sheep grown in some lab. But you saw it growing.
Really?
Crazy. Yeah, it was on the TV. It was on the news.
Interesting. That I did not. If you find that, let me know, please.
Okay,
I want to go to view number two, because we have three views, and this is only the first.
Did you just touch on the question? Does it only beef, or can you guru pork?
So, according to this, you'd be fine. Second view. The second view is that meat cells are not the essence of meat. Mm-hmm. Meat cells are a vehicle for their tasty contents, which are not being cloned in our, they're not being bred, so to speak, in our discussion, and they don't enter the meat via an animal's digestion. Let me unpack that a little bit. This is a view of Rabbi Tzvi Reisman from Los Angeles, and in his articles in Tchumen, there's this whole back and forth that goes back. Tchumen is now up to its 37th issue. So issues 34, 35, and 36 all had articles on this. 37, I just got a hold of, doesn't have anything on the topic. But I looked up an article online called The Science of Cooking, and they explain the way that that meat gets its taste. Meat gets its taste from fats and from the proteins that recombine with sugar when you heat the meat. There's something called the Maillard reaction. You have it. Okay, so I saw it online. What it means is, and this is the argument, that the cell is just a container. It's a delivery device. When you eat something and say it tastes like meat, you're talking about not the cell per se, the muscle cell, the frame, but something that is produced from what the animal ate, what the animal, you know, what the animal absorbed and digested. That's the idea. The science of it isn't really that important in the sense that none of the writers of this actually go into the science of it and explain what they're saying. That's my understanding of what they're saying. All that they're saying, all that Rabbi Reisman is saying, and you'll see it as we go through the sources, is that the cell is just the frame. It's not the food, and therefore it won't prohibit anything. And let me now walk you through it. Before Rabbi Reisman gets to that argument, he has one basic argument that he starts with, in which he says the cell is 100% fine. Forget the whole vehicle container discussion. But the Gemara tells us, you're familiar with it, it's source number 9 on your sheet, that a fetus, a human fetus, until 40 days, is called Maya Ba'alma. Pure water, right? That's the way we look at it. We say it's just water, a cell. So he says, look, a 40-day-old fetus, 39-day-old fetus, has cells, right? Including stem cells, right? And yet you're willing to call it water to say that it is insignificant. He says you could kill it. I mean, there's a whole power behind ending its life.
But can you eat it?
Could you eat the fetus of less than 4? That's an interesting question. I would wager that he would have to say...
There's no nefesh, that's all it's...
But he's... No, but his argument is, if you're allowed to end its life, it's clearly not a living creature at that stage. And he argues it should be viewed as Maya Ba'alma. Now, the truth of the matter is, I already told you in the beginning, they're not really using pure stem cells. They're using myoblasts, and I don't know at what stage those develop, whether they're there before 40 days or not. But he makes the argument to say it is just water. And that's his opening shot, is the cell is irrelevant, and therefore whatever it produces is irrelevant. Yeah?
As far as duplicating the taste, you don't need the cell. All you do, you analyze what chemical is contained and gives it taste. For instance, in bananas, you have this isoamyl acetate.
Mm-hmm.
You use that chemical, and you can make anything taste like a banana.
Right. The problem here, though, is that they haven't isolated the chemicals. It's in what looks like meat and comes from meat. But you're right. If you could just do that, if you just mimic that, then everybody would recognize it's not meat, and you'd be home free. That's what they do.
Well, they're probably doing that, for instance, when they say they make part of it the chicken soup.
Yeah.
That,
well, that's just salt.
No, it's not salt. It actually has a taste.
Right. No, you are correct. It's actually a product called Beyond Burger, which I'm told is the closest thing to meat without being meat. And I understand from someone who contacted them that they were actually applying for our hashgacha. Now it's pure vegetable material. So who knows what they're going to come up with. But you're right. If we could really isolate the taste, then we'd be done. If you could isolate what it is and replicate the chemicals and not involve the meat and get the texture, because the texture is important for meat eaters, then you'd be fine.
Maybe some nutrition too.
Well, who asked you for nutrition? That's why you put pickles on it. So in terms of Rabbi Reisman's argument, he first makes the Maya Ba'alma argument, the argument that it's just water. But then he gets into what could be called the meat of the issue. And he says, if you don't accept the idea that it's just like water and therefore it's fine, he says, still, the cell is just a frame. And he applies that. So for example, I asked the question in the beginning of the shiur, whether you could say that the one cell that you took from the meat is going to be batel, is going to be nullified. And he argues it's nullified in all the additives that you give it to nourish it. Now, everybody who's writing on this seems to be comfortable assuming that you're only taking one cell from the animal, because they talk about it as invisible and so on. I don't actually know whether they just take one cell or whether they take a chunk and then grow from there. I don't know. They're assuming that you're taking one cell. But in terms of this this idea that the cell is just the frame and not the food, here's an application of it. This debate about bittul. Rabbi Reisman says, I brought it for you in number 10. He says, afilu im hachanas habasar hameshuvat nilkach tasha asur laochlo. Even if to prepare this cloned meat, they take a cell, taval is a cell, that you're not allowed to eat. Whether because you took it from a pig, whether because you took it from a live animal, that cell will not prohibit the meat you produce from it. Why? Shekein vaday shebetarobes hata im shaar hamarkivim. He says, because definitely when you mix the cell with the other ingredients, chelbonim, proteins, sukarim, sugars, chumtzot are acids. I assume this is amino acids that he's talking about. Shmanim, oils, v'atzot yam, and that seaweed that you use as the framework on which the cells grow, the scaffold. He says, yesh shishim hetzer keneged ha'isser. At that point, you have 60-1. You can nullify your non-kosher cell. Shari hata enu nikar la'ayin klal, because your cell isn't even visible. V'alkein hata ha'asser misbatel v'hetzer, and therefore is nullified in the permitted mixture. He says, he's viewing the added ingredients as not being part of the cell. Now, the opposing view is going to say no. The contents become part of the cell. When you eat food, it becomes part of you. It's not a separate entity. These are nourishing the cell's growth. And therefore they become part of the cell, and you can't say the cell is nullified by the food for the cell. But that's his argument.
From an actual point of view, when you eat meat, it's 99% cells. The proteins are inside the cells. It's connected. I mean, it's mostly that's all made up of cells. If you were to, why didn't you just see that one cell is butthole and all the millions of other cells?
Well,
that's what he should have said.
No, he can't. He can't, for reasons we're going to get to.
Because if he can't, then I don't think.
I'll tell you the reason why he can't say it, because Rav Ariel is going to say it, and he's going to explain it doesn't work, is because if this cell is usur, then the children's cells it produces may be usur.
So all the stuff he's talking about is a minority compared to the cell. I mean,
No, he's saying the food, the contents itself that you're adding in for nutrition outnumber, so to speak.
All it does is make more cells. And so when you look under a microscope, all you see is cells.
Understood. But he's saying that you've added all this material, which by volume is greater than the original cell that's there, and therefore it nullifies it before you even create all these other cells. That's his argument.
If you add enzymes, the enzymes facilitate the what's going on.
Right.
In itself, it doesn't pass right through the enzyme. Does not become part of the food.
The enzyme gets digested.
It's not, it passes through without being digested.
Where does it go?
It'll go to waste eventually, but it's not, it doesn't become the actual part of the food. It just facilitates it.
Right, but here's what we have. We have a single cell, assuming that's really what they're starting with, that they drop into the dish. They add materials, which you can see, onto the dish as part of nourishing the cell so that it will reproduce. At that moment, it's more than 60-1 of nutrition that you've added versus the cell. You can't see the cell anywhere within the mixture, because you can't see the cell at all. And therefore, that's his argument.
Isn't Mavanta, if you're going to say that it's a source of Israel, Mavanta is Rukhat Chila, so really that's not helping you.
So there are a whole bunch of other questions that now come into play. Let me talk about a couple of them. Number one, some object, this cell is asui l'tam. It's made for taste, right? Go back to the whole whiskey debate, right, about the sherry casks, and can it be mevatel something that's added to a mixture if it's meant to be added for taste? He says that's no problem. Why? Because the cell has no taste. And he brings you a Moshe Feinstein on gelatin in number 11 as his basis for saying so, when Moshe talks about the idea that the gelatin is dried out, it has no taste, and therefore it won't create a meat and milk mixture. So he argues the cells have no taste also.
How does he know the cells have no taste?
That's his argument. He says the taste comes from the contents, and that's where I come back to my science point. The point about the fats and the oils and everything else being what gives it the taste. He's arguing that you separate the cell from its contents. We don't view them as the same. And then he also argues, someone might ask, and I think Chaim was going to ask that also if I'd let him go a little further with it, that this is a davar hamamid. Right? Davar hamamid is not batel. We have a principle rabbinically that if you have something that's in a mixture, and it's a tiny minority of the mixture, but it's what makes the mixture work, right? Think of the discussion about rennet and cheese as an example. It's what makes the mixture work. Then it's now, then it cannot be batel. However, he says, once again, the cell to him is just a vehicle. It's not the mamid. He says in source number 12 that the mamid is actually all the stuff that you added. He says, "L'chora yishmakom lomar shatasha nilkach me'abehem l'tzor hachanas habasar meshuvat hu davar hamamid." He says there could have been room to argue that the cell taken from the animal for this cloning of meat is a davar hamamid. Hamekayem is kol ha'tarovas, it maintains the entire mixture. Shayu ha'basis va'yisod l'chol talich ha'tarbus hisrabus ha'taim v'achanas ha'basar, because after all it is the foundation for all the growth of the cells and preparation of the meat. But then he goes on to say that it's not, because the things that you add, all of the proteins, the sugars, the fats, and everything else that keep it alive, those are the davar hamamid. And then he says, well, maybe they're both davar hamamid, and it's the zekorim, and he makes that argument. In terms of Chaim's question about bitul isur lechatchila, so he goes through that discussion and points out different ways that you could look at bitul isur lechatchila, and he claims that he has ways to get around that as well, including the argument they're not really doing it for the Jews, and what about when the Jew purchases it? It's a whole other extensive discussion in literature, but they do address the question. We might even come back to it a little bit at the end, because there's one piece I have at the end that may be relevant for it.
Let's assume you don't accept the whole Gemara Yevamos analogy anyway.
That it's just water. Correct. His first argument is it's water. And water is kosher. That's his first argument. His second argument is, this is really, the cell is just the vehicle, and it's batel in all the other things that are in the culture as it grows. And he applies this principle in another way. He applies it to the debate about what if it comes from a live creature and basar min hachai, right? Or aver min hachai. Or what if it comes from a non-kosher creature? He says that's okay because, again, he says the cell is not edible. And he compares it to gelatin. He says the gelatin loses its status as food. And even if you prohibit gelatin, that's because it returns to a status of food when they add stuff to it. But he says the cell never gets restored to the status of food. It's just a frame in which there is stuff that is actually food, that is actually edible. He says the cell itself is not anything that's edible, and therefore it's not a problem. That's his argument. So, whereas the first school of thought said, this isn't meat, and it's entirely kosher, and it's entirely parav, and everything else, his view is a little more circumspect, and he's a lot more discussion that I didn't go through here. But the upshot is, he says, if you take it from a shechted kosher animal, then you're for sure fine. And possibly even if you take it from a live, non-kosher animal, you're going to be fine.
Even live.
Yeah. And its status is power of. That's his argument. Then you have a third view. And the third view says, you want to know what meat is? Meat is meat. That's it. Meat is meat. Don't be so highfalutin in all your conversations. Come on. It's meat. Beginning, middle, and end. Rav Yaakov Ariel, Rav Yehuda Batzalel Shpitz, Rav Shabtai Yagel, all have published articles, and I think this is consistent with Rav Shechter as well, who was quoted earlier. And the argument goes like
this. Meat cells are meat.
Yes, meat cells are meat, meaning these cells that came from the animal are meat. The Rav Yaakov Ariel brings you the following proof. He talks about the case of an egg that came from a bird that is a trepha. Right? A trepha means a creature that's going to die within a year, for our purposes, without getting fancy in what blemish it has, or what, not what blemish, what wound it has, or whatever it is. That's a trepha. And usually we would say, that which is produced by a trefa is not kosher. So milk from a trefa cow is not kosher. That was the whole discussion that years ago happened with the cows that had the methane problem, and they were being drained, so to speak, in a way that made make the cow a trefa. That's where that came from. So the Gemara Temura discusses the status of an egg from a trefa. Take a look at number 14, please. Amar Ahuna. Modim Chachamim Rabbi Eliezer be'afroch beitzas trefa sha'aser. The Chachamim agree with Rabbi Eliezer that if you have an egg from a trefa and a chick hatches from the egg, the chick is prohibited. My time, why? Ad kam lo pligi alei the Rabbi Eliezer el bevlad behema. There was a debate between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chacham regarding an animal that was born from a trefa. Deme avira karabia. And the reason for the debate is because it isn't nourished solely by the mother. There's also nutrition that comes from the air. And that's its own discussion we're not going into right now. Aval beitzas trefa, but the egg from the trefa, migufa de tarnagolta karabia, it grows from the chicken itself. That's where it's nourished. So afilu rabbanan modu, even the rabbis will agree this is not kosher. Amar le Abaye, to which Abaye said, adarabba, just the opposite, ipcha mistabra. You can make the opposite argument. Gabe beitza emas godla. When you're dealing with an egg, when does the chick grow? L'chimasrecha. The chick grows inside the egg as the egg breaks down. Right? The egg has nutrition in it for the chick. The materials that are in it break down, and that's how the chick grows. V'chiasrecha afra be'almahu. And when the material in the egg breaks down, it's considered like dirt in halacha, and not part of the mother. And therefore, he says, afilu Rabbi Elazar Mode, even Rabbi Eliezer will agree that this is mutter. And he says further, I have an explicit brisa in which it says that Rabbi Eliezer agrees with the Chachamim that the egg, that the chick is going to be permitted, and at that point Rav Huna has to respond and say, well, if you have a brisa, then I guess I have nothing else to say. Tanya, Tanya, if you learned it, you learned it. What am I going to do? So, in this Gemara in Temura, we say that the chick, according to Abaye, who wins, this chick is kosher because it's supported by material that is really just dust. It deteriorates before the chick uses it. So, Rabbi Ariel makes the argument in source number 15. Ta'alich hivatzruto shel ha'efroach mehabeitza. The path of the forming of the chick from the egg, miluveh b'sirchona shel ha'beitza, is accompanied by the deterioration of the egg. Trefa srucha in ruyal achila. Well, a deteriorated trefa is not edible, v'yisra trefa pokeya, and therefore the prohibition of this is a trefa is removed. It's gone. That's what he writes about the afroach, about the egg. Jump to after the parentheses. Lefini mogze, according to this line of reason, benidon dida, in our case, habasar hamiturebet, this cultured meat, asur, is prohibited, kilo avar talich shel sirchon, because there is no deterioration here. Nothing deteriorated. You took one cell, it became two cells, four cells, eight cells, 16 cells. The original cells didn't break down before the new cells were formed. So he says, his argument is, this is just like the egg if the food in the egg had remained as food. And just like the egg from the trefa would not be kosher, so do the cell. But unless this animal was a shechted animal, this cell is going to be non-kosher. That's his argument.
What's it called in the animal where you can shecht the animal?
The ben pakua?
Yeah,
that comes up tangentially in this discussion as well, the ben pakua. There's an argument that's made, maybe they should take a sow from a ben pakua for this, and then they avoid the shechita discussion. So it does come up. It also comes up in the Maris Ayin discussion, because that was the traditional explanation for Yosef's bad things about his brother and Avram and Achai, was that it was a ben pakua. But in terms of this piece, he says this thing is meat, and he says as far as your argument that it's maya ba'alma, that it's just water, he says that's a law that's unique to human beings. Otherwise, with the beitzas trefa, you could make the argument that it's maya ba'alma. that it's just water also. You can make the same argument there. He says it's not so. There's more of a discussion. I actually brought it for you a little bit further of the in number 16, the back and forth. He argues that this whole idea of the Maya Balma does not apply. But the main point is that he has argued that the meat cells are meats because they don't break down before the replication takes place. That's the idea. And since the cell is meat, he argues with the points that Rabbi Reisman made. So first of all, in terms of bittul in the added ingredients, he says, and not just him, but also this Rabbi Yehuda Bezalel Spitz, says that the added ingredients just create a larger meat cell. Take a look at source number 17. He says, Lefiani is dainty, in my humble opinion, maskana zu eina pshuta. This conclusion that Rabbi Reisman drew is not so simple. Ki ha-kimikalim v'achumrim ha-acherim ha-meorvim b'tarobas. The chemicals and materials that are in this mixture, lo hayu klum lulei tai ha-geza. There will be nothing without the stem cells. Hashem shel ha-motzar ha-mugmar. You know what we call the finished product? Hu hamburger tai geza, a stem cell hamburger. Because the stem cells are what create it. So he says, when we talk about davar ha-ma'amid, what is it that is the essential ingredient that makes everything go? That's the substantive ingredient, which gives it the form. He says, that's your stem cell. The impact of, and again, he keeps saying stem cell, whether it's correct or a misnomer, but he says the impact of the stem cell on the finished product is great. Even if they're not visible, that's where the hamburger comes from. And even if you'll say, well, this isn't made for taste, because you can't taste it, he says, that doesn't stop it from being the essential ingredient in this mixture. So he argues. Not only that, Rav Shabtai Yagiel takes us back to Chaim's point. Chaim asks, isn't this bitter lisser lechatchila? You're not allowed to intentionally be mevatel, cancel out a prohibition in a mixture, right? So Rabbi Reisman claims that it's not a problem for the following reason. He says, there's more to his argument, as I mentioned, but the one point that gets debated here is fascinating. He says the added ingredients are not there for the sake of bittul. The added ingredient, in other words, being mevatel isur lechatchila means the following. I have a pot of milk. I dropped a meatball in it. The meatball is 1/30th of the mixture, so I dump more milk in order to cancel the meat. Rabbi Reisman says that's not why you're adding these nutritional things for the cell. You're adding it because you want the cell to replicate. So therefore, it's not done for the sake of bittul. Bittul is just a side effect. That was Rabbi Reisman's argument. So Rabbi Shabtai Yagiel says, no. Source number 18. He says, lo yale al adas shachomrim acherim shakol tafkidamu laharboz laafroz es to'e hageza yivalu b'shishim es to'e hageza. He says, if that's true, then you can't make the argument that they're going to cancel the cell. They're helping the cell to grow. You can't tell me they nullify it. They're making it bigger. What's the debate about? The debate is, do these added ingredients have the status of becoming part of the cell? That's what Rabbi Yagiel is saying. Right? It becomes part of the cell, and therefore you can't look at it as nullifying it. Rabbi Reisman is saying, no, they're a separate entity. They exist alongside the cell, and they outnumber it, outweigh it, outmass it, whatever term you want to put on it. And that's the way that he looks at it. The same argument comes up in terms of the issue of it being of the cell being called food and being called edible. Right? Rabbi Reisman said, you can't eat the cell. It's the stuff inside it that actually has the taste and is the food. Rabbi Yaakov Ariel says, I don't know what you're talking about. In source number 19, he says, I'm jumping to the second line, the beginning of the line, in 19, Amnam ta'im mikroskopiyim einam amdim la'achila beglal zi'irutam. He says, you're right. Good luck eating microscopic cells. They're too small, you can't even find them. However, b'mahutam hem ru'im la'achila. In their very nature, they are suitable for eating. If you had enough of them, You could see it, you would eat it. Shoya Totsar Mupak Mehem Zehela Tamakarib Tchunotav. He says the end product after they multiply is gonna be something that just is a million of this little cell. It's not that it's inedible, it's that you can't eat it because you can't see it. He just makes that distinction. So the upshot of this third view, right? Our first view said this is not normal meat. Right? Whether because you make the comparison to the Sefer Yetzirah, or whether you take Rosh Hechter's position that it wasn't produced from its mother, whatever, or you take the language of Panim Chadashos, of Rav Lior and Rav Aviner, and you say, therefore, it's not like meat at all, it's brand new, it's kosher, it's pariv, you know, alei batzlach, you're good. The second view, Rabbi Reisman's view, is to say, it is from the meat, however, it's batel, either it's maya ba'alma, it's just water, or it is batel in the ingredients that you add. It's not the mamid, it's not for taste and all of that, and therefore it's going to be kosher and it's going to be parav, and don't worry about a thing, and if you are worried, to get it from a shechted animal and be fine, but it's not going to be meat. There's no taste to infect basar b'chalav and so on, because the cell is different from what it carries within it. Because what it carried within it, and this is my addition, I should make very clear where he ends and I begin. The reason why it makes sense for him to say that the contents of the cell are different from the cell is because it didn't enter the cell the way it normally does in a biological creature, which is it eats, and then cavities are carried in the bloodstream, and they make it into the cells that way. I think he will view that as different from what's going on here. I think that's the distinction that he's trying to make. And then the third view is to say, you're missing it entirely. This is meat, and it is from whatever you took it from, and retains the status of whatever you took it from, and therefore Ariel's recommendation is to say, get a cell from fish. Or maybe get it from an animal that was shechted, right? A kosher animal that was shechted and is still moving. In other words, because he's operating under the view that I mentioned in the beginning that says you need to get it from a live creature in order for this to work. Even though, as I've noted, other writers say you can take it from a dead animal, so it won't be relevant. But that's his suggestion. It still may be osir for non-Jews, but at least for Jews it'll be kosher. Well, there's a neighbor
and
a chayim.
A shechted animal and a live animal. Freshly shechted animal, so
yeah,
no, the animal.
But that's what I'm saying. This is one of the problems. I mentioned it before you got here. That not everybody writing on this is fully aware of what's going on in the process, and that affects what they say. There are other halachic debates here that I've completely skipped. There's a whole discussion about gidulim and gidule gidulim. It's just there's too much here for the hour, and I wanted to show you the three different approaches, but I wanted to also do the following. Take a look at your sheet at the last page. Public positions that have been taken besides the ones we already mentioned. So this is a Times of Israel article from 2013 in which Rabbi Ganak is quoted as saying that he wants it to come from an animal that was shechted already. At the same time, they quote him as saying it could be considered parav. I don't know if that could means, yeah, you could call that parav. Or if that means, well, it could be considered parav. I don't know what the could, whether he's saying it is parav or whether he's saying we have to still think about this some more. It's not clear to me. The COR had a similarly vague statement on this, saying also this requires more analysis as time goes by. There's an institution in Israel called Machon HaTorah V'Haaretz, which took the stringent view, like Rav Ariel, in source number 21, and they said, no, it has to come from a kosher creature that was shechted. That's in number 21. Whereas, as we saw, I mentioned the super meat video, Rav Aviner, Rav Sherlo, Rav Lior, saying kosher and pariv, and enjoy. Two last questions that I just wanted to touch on that I think are also fascinating. First of all, can you make the argument that the original cell, this actually we saw mentioned in Rabbi Reisman earlier, can you make the argument that the original cell is invisible? Right? Rabbi Reisman made that argument above. He said it's invisible and therefore it doesn't matter. It's like an invisible bug. It's like chametz in the reservoir or something. So Rabbi Yaakov Ariel argues against this by quoting Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Orbach in number 22. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman was dealing with the issue of modifying genes and the question of whether those genes have any significance. They're tiny. So does it have any significance at all when you're modifying the genes in a cell? And Rav Shlomo Zalman's answer, the question there was kilayim. Is there an issue of kilayim? You're mixing species. And Rav Shlomo Zalman there wrote in number 22, he says, because this is what you want, you are going for that entity specifically, the size is irrelevant. And therefore you will not be allowed to do the modification. That's his argument. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Reisman does not like this view because he insists Maya Bealma, it's water, and so on. But that's one piece that I thought was fascinating as a conversation. What if something's invisible but is meaningful? That was one. The other one is, what about the Maris Ayin discussion? So here, Rabbi Reisman quotes you a tshuva from Rav Ovadia. Rav Ovadia is dealing with the classic Maris Ayin kashrus questions that have come up in the last decades with food chemistry. You know, when you have your artificial cheese and whatever else. He quotes first a discussion based on the Pri Chadash, who has this idea that we don't create new Maris Ayin prohibitions, but then he mentions the position of Rav Yonis and Ibishitz in the Crazy U Placy, in which he says the following. Take a look at source number 23. He says, after the ellipsis, Shechalav Shkedim lo nikra chalav. Almond milk is not called milk. Elame peros, it's nothing, and it's liquid from the almonds. V'lo mishum sheyesho dimyon l'chalav b'mareihu ne'asor l'vashel bo chalav. We are not going to prohibit you to cook meat in it. It shouldn't say chalav, it should say basar. I think it's a typo in the tshuva. But he says, the fact that it looks like milk is not going to prohibit us from cooking meat in it. And he says, I'll prove it to you. You know, as the church noticed sometime in the Middle Ages, red wine looks an awful lot like blood. But we don't prohibit red wine and say, oh no, people are going to think you're drinking blood. They did say fish blood. If it's in a kli, because it's called blood also, is going to be usur. So since it's called blood and it looks like blood, it's usur. But he says, chalav shkedim, almond milk, enalav shem shel dam, elame peros. He says, almond milk is not anything. Almond milk, he doesn't mean dam, he means chalav, really. It's not milk, it's just juice from the almond.
That's what
they
call it, almond
milk. Right. V'lachein, and so Ravadya makes the argument that it shouldn't be under maris ayin. So Rabbi Reisman wants to use this here and say, so this isn't really meat. So number one, I think he's not going to win this argument. Because, of course, we call it meat. We call it meat because it comes from meat. That's number one. But number two, as Rabbi Yehuda Betzalel Shpitz points out, no one paskins like that view of Rav Yonis and Ibishitz. No one follows that view. Meaning, until it became wildly popular for people to have creamer, you know, non-dairy, real non-dairy creamer, we said, keep the container out on the table. Right, we didn't say you can just add it and eat it with a meat meal and everything else. We said keep the container out there so everybody knows what this is. That's what we paskin. So the same thing is going to be true here, that you will have Maris Ayin concerns because we don't follow the crazy placey on this.
I mean, Maris Ayin would be eating it with cheese.
What do you mean this meat here? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, what Maris Ayin? The hamburger.
Right. No. That's what we're talking about. Correct. Yeah. But that's a little bit of the Maris Ayin discussion that goes on with this. I figured I'd bring as well. All right.
As far as red goes, a lot of the factors.